Happy, happy, happy hump day. What can I tell you? It's Wednesday, and I have been looking over my notes. I always put together some notes for every program, and then basically I glance at them and then just dismiss them because the mind starts and the little gerbils start going around on the little wheel inside of my head, and I'll be off in another direction entirely, or sometimes I'll zero in on one particular story. But there's just so much to talk about today. And at 12:30, I have Lori Cardoza-Moore coming on. And so I want to make sure I get all of my thoughts out of the gerbil cage and onto the airwaves so that you could be privy to just how maddening it is to have to live with this mind of mine. You know, what goes on between my ears is amazing. I started out my day, you know, doing research. Well, I started out my day in prayer, and then I moved into my research, and then I moved into, like, selecting stories, and then I moved into, you know, doing some more in-depth kinds of research, and then I went to, well, I don't know what to call it. I am now running in the pool, like with a belt on and weights on my legs. And I don't ask, but I'm just too old to run. I fell the other day. I don't want to, you know, have that experience again. So I'm running in the pool. You can't hurt yourself running in the pool, right? So I did that. Get back to the house. I remembered that I had a ceremony to place my Uncle Joe's ashes into a niche at 11 o'clock, but I also had a meeting at 9 o'clock with somebody who was, you know, who is a dear friend now and also, you know, a big muckety-muck in the Republican Party in Broward County, if that's possible. It's hard to be a muckety-muck in a party's executive committee in a county that has been completely disrespected and disregarded by the Republican Party of Florida and the RNC. But anyway, you know, I just really love this guy and I love his wife. And I met with him for a quick cup of coffee this morning, and I got to hear all about the Lincoln Day dinner that took place last night with the, the governor of the state just, you know, rolling up to the Bergeron Ranch and with, like, you know, sirens and, you know, just a lot of get yourselves pumped up. We got an election coming up stuff that typically happens in these party affairs. And I'm not going to get into any of the details, but every time I hear about what the BREC, the Broward Republican Executive Committee, has done or is doing or how much money they're raising, I just roll my eyes. And I feel bad because, you know, my friend is trying his best to, you know, keep people engaged in politics. And it's kind of a daunting task in the county of Broward. But, you know, I listened, I didn't even ask questions. I just always state my opinions, and I watch him feel the confirmation. You know, that's how he feels about a lot of things the way I feel, but he's just one of these people who never gives up. He's going to try to work within the system and, you know, make changes within the system, and he doesn't let the system compromise him, I'll tell you that. Showed up and brought me a Let's Go Brandon hat, you know, so he don't take no for an answer from, you know, from the big, real big wigs in the party. But, you know, after that, I came back to get my husband who was doing the service, and I just glanced at the headlines, right? Because I didn't have time to sit down, and I had already pretty much just determined what I was going to be talking about today. And obviously, there's an election that went on yesterday that needs to be talked about, because when you have an election where you end up, it's three candidates and two of them end up in a dead tie, there's a lot of questions that need to be asked, particularly by people like me. You know, because I have consistently said that the Republican Party is the best party I have ever seen shoot themselves in the foot. It was a photo finish, okay? You had the establishment candidate, this McCormick, with 31.1% of the vote. And then you had Dr. Oz, who the 45 backed, with 31.3%. That's a statistical dead heat tie, right? But the interesting part about it is then you had this Kathy Barnett come in with 24.8% of the vote. And let me tell you something. I told everybody weeks ago, literally weeks ago, including some of my closest friends, including one of my closest friends who has a, you know, a personal stake in Pennsylvania politics, right? You know, lived in Pennsylvania most of her life. I said to them all, this Barnett is a plant. She's been placed in there to divide the Republican vote and not have a clear winner. Because when you don't have a clear winner, even if it's finally decided in McCormick's, you know, to him, or it's decided to Oz, that fluctuating midterm kind of drama recount hurts the party. And if it hurts the party, then you can pretty much assume the Democrats had something to do with it. And I believe they did. I'm not going to change my mind about it. I become even more convinced as I look at this statistic, because the votes that went to Barnett would have inevitably gone to Mehmet Oz. So he probably would have had 50% or better of the vote. That's just, you know, my reading of the whole thing. I did not weigh in on that election because I really didn't have a clear picture. But now I do. And my gut instincts were right. And it's very sad. It's very maddening. Because I don't care whether it goes to Oz or it goes to McCormick. Now they both have been rendered, you know, literally, they've been neutered. And then you have this third candidate who says, oh, I'm not even going to support either one of them. Like, what on earth? You know, no wonder that's a purple state leaning to blue, because the Republicans can't get their acts together there. You know. And then, of course, Madison Cawthorn got voted out. And as far as I'm concerned, that was inevitable. And not because he's a, you know, a diehard conservative. This was a reelection bid that was taking place. And he did get the support of Donald Trump. So, of course, now it's all going to be about, oh, Trump doesn't have the power he used to have. Look at Mehmet Oz and look at Madison Cawthorn. Oh, you know, it's Trump is losing his mojo or whatever. Never mind. Okay. Trump has not lost his mojo. He won't lose his mojo. The left wishes he would lose his mojo. A lot of the right wishes he would lose his mojo, but he ain't. So, you know, the Madison Cawthorn, in my opinion, did everything that he could possibly do to render himself a loser. You know, he really did. And it's not because of his principles, or it's not because of his ideas or his policies, because many people who are surviving these crazy times and surviving the rhinos in the Republican Party have the same positions and even more far-right positions than Madison Cawthorn did, but they don't rack up a litany of scandals that will turn people against them. You know, the people who support the Republican Party in North Carolina, and obviously in the 11th Congressional District, because they gave it to State Senator Chuck Edwards, and it was a close race, you know. But people who support the Republican Party in North Carolina do not support driving without a license, do not support claiming that you were at orgies and then not being able to say where those orgies were and who organized those orgies and all of that other stuff, right? And not even Donald Trump can push that kind of candidate over the, you know, over the finish line. Just can't happen. He left his election night party about 10:30 last night, and he, you know, he called, he made his you know, concession call. You know, it's a great story. He's a young guy, one of the youngest people to serve. And he walked out with dignity, or rode out with dignity. He said, congratulations to Chuck Edwards on securing the nomination. It's time for the district, that's the 11th district in North Carolina, and the GOP to rally behind the Republican ticket and defeat the Democrats' nominee in November. And that is appropriate. Now, the Democrat is a guy named Don Davis, who won a handy victory. And that's you know, that's going to be an interesting race. That's all. I'm quite confident that it's going to be. I think it's in the same district. No, he might have been in the first district. Well, whatever. You know, Madison is going out with some style. You know. which he should have had when he was in Congress. We really didn't need a video featuring him naked and simulating a sex act, and we sure didn't need a another video with him in his car and his male aide putting his hand on Cawthorn's crotch. See, all of that stuff, unforced errors. You cannot afford, as a Republican, to have unforced errors. Now, if you're a Democrat and those kind of videos surface, that just, like, you know, solidifies your winning the nomination. I mean, you know, get caught with, you know, crack and a hooker in a hotel, and you can stay mayor of places like D.C. But Republicans can't do this stuff. And he was too young to know that simple fact. That's what my opinion is. Now, the Pennsylvania Lieutenant Governor, John Fetterman, will be the Democratic nominee for this very tight Senate race in November. But we don't know. Will it be David McCormick or will it be Mehmet Oz? How soon will we know? Now, I happen to not be I'm not an over-the-top fan of Dr. Mehmet Oz. I think he has a really a much better chance of winning a general election than the CEO of a hedge fund, or that's what he used to do, David McCormick. But I don't know, you know. Pennsylvania is a weird place. I know some people from there, and, you know, Pat Toomey, who was the retiring senator. I don't know how he ever was elected, but he was multiple times. So I'm just going to back away from declaring what I think is going to happen until we see if, is it McCormick or is it Oz? I think if it's Oz, then the Republicans have that seat. I think if it's McCormick, I'm clueless. I mean, maybe, maybe not, probably not. Okay. Then we had a congressman by the name of Ted Budd, who was endorsed by Donald Trump. He defeated the former governor of North Carolina, Pat McCrory, in a Republican primary to succeed the retiring Senator Richard Burr. Now, Burr is a great politician. That's how I'm going to say. He wasn't a great anything, but he's a great politician. And he voted against certifying Trump's defeat. And that's why Donald Trump was, you know, a big supporter of this Ted Budd, who nobody had ever heard of before. And he just kept going up and up in the polls after Trump got behind him. And now he's going to have to, you know, we're going to have to see what happens. He's facing Sherry Beasley in the November election. She is a former Chief Justice of the North Carolina Supreme Court. It's going to be a very competitive race. She's a black female, and we all know the Democrat Party will get right behind her. Doesn't matter what she's done, where she's been, what she knows. She'll get 100% support and lots of money. So that's what I have to say about all those, you know, elections. That I still don't have a clue what's going to happen in the senatorial election in Pennsylvania, and neither does anyone else. So if they tell you they do, they're lying. Okay. Now, don't forget you can download our app, and then you can listen to things like my podcast whenever you feel like it, or listen to today's show later on, or turn somebody else on to today's show or the No Restraint podcast. If you've got that app on your phone, all you do is show it to them. Yeah, that's how I get the word out. I say, hey, you see this app? Get it. So do me a favor. Don't just you download that app on your smartphone, but have somebody you know who really needs to hear our message, have them download it, okay? Let me take a quick break. I will be right back. Oh, my gosh. You know, you can't make this stuff up, right? Didn't Chris Wallace leave Fox because he wanted a new challenge that went broader than politics? And then he landed at CNN Plus, where, by the way, they closed in less than a month after it launched. So now the announcement has been made that he is going to be hosting a Sunday news program. Wait, let me get this right. So he left a Sunday news program because he didn't want to do that anymore. And now he's going to be doing a Sunday news program on a station that nobody watches, least of all on Sunday. Oh, gosh. You know, Mike Wallace must be just shaking his head, really. just shaking his head. How did that happen? He's wondering. But, you know, I know I said I was going to be talking with Lori Cardoza more. That's actually tomorrow that I'll be talking with her. Today I'm going to talk to Hans von Spakovsky because I got some election questions and he's the expert. So we're going to talk with Hans in the next segment of the show. But I was looking at all the political fallout, right, from the shooting in Buffalo and then the shooting in Laguna in California. And what you see are always the same things. You know, right after the shooting takes place, you will get the left that begins to call for stricter gun laws, and then they talk about, you know, bringing back legislation that will enable the government to track potential mass shooters better. And then, of course, we will inevitably hear either Sleepy Joe or someone else talk about how we got to stop with assault weapons. Can't have assault weapons. No assault weapons. Meanwhile, a lot of these crimes, these mass shootings, do not involve, you know, rifles. They don't. The one in California was handguns. There have been others that were perpetrated by individuals with handguns. Big mass shootings. But hey, don't confuse them with the facts. So some of the views that always emerge after these shootings and now the Buffalo shooting, one will always say the tragedy was primarily political and the tragedy is a direct result of white supremacy and the availability of guns in the United States. And then the other side says the shooting is less about politics and more about mental health. And they will say things like, well, gee, you know, this guy spent a day and a half in a mental health hospital last year after he threatened a school shooting. And they will even show you that in his so-called manifesto, which isn't a manifesto at all, it's just full of contradictions. He claims that he's on the political left, then he claims he's on the political right, and then he's a neo-Nazi, but then again he's a socialist, and then he's an eco-fascist, and you don't know what this guy's political philosophy is. You just don't know. He was a mess. He was a psychopath. That's what he was. But now the response has now shifted, right? It's not just the rhetoric on one side and the rhetoric on the other side. Yesterday, in response to the shooting, Democrats actually revived or are attempting to revive the Domestic Terrorism Prevention Act. This is a bill that will create more new offices within the FBI and the DOJ and Homeland Security whose sole purpose would be investigating potential domestic terror threats. The Democrat lawmakers say that these officers will focus on what the government now considers white supremacy. And listen, remember when there was a push to ban bump stocks after the Vegas shooting? And then there was a push for magazine restrictions after the San Bernardino shooting. And there was a push to ban assault weapons after the Sandy Hook shooting. Well, now, in addition to gun control measures, which we always expect and anticipate, now we have to worry about whether the guns, or actually whether the government will be monitoring anybody who they think might be an extremist, particularly white supremacists, which means anybody who voted for Trump. You, me, we're going to be under scrutiny now. Unfortunately for the left, unfortunately for people of good conscience, I don't care if you're on the right or you're in the middle, what's left of, you know, the grassroots Republicans, Tea Party guys, have made the point that the government has a very poor track record of deciding who is and who isn't a domestic terrorist. And they call parents who are protesting school boards over COVID lockdowns and critical race theory, they were called domestic terrorists. And that ain't going to fly. It isn't. Free speech is a big deal to everybody. The bill failed in part because of opposition from the far left, right? You know, the squad called it a horrible bill. Cori Bush said she wouldn't support it unless there were clear definitions offered, because these people know that government doesn't do anything well, doesn't do much right. So when the president travels to Buffalo First and foremost, did you notice how nervous everybody around him looked? Like, oh God, please don't let him say anything. Oh God, please, 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 please. All he could do was talk about, you know, the assault weapons, the assault weapons, and the assault weapons. That's it. You know, that he's a one-trick pony. Anyway, stay right where you are. I'm going to be speaking with Hans von Spakovsky next. And, of course, he does make an appearance in the movie 2000 Mules. Nobody knows better than Hans what goes on in these elections. He has served in multiple administrations. He knows election law and he knows election manipulation better than anyone else. So Hans is going to check in with us in just a little while. A good reason for you to leave your dial right where it is. I'll be right back. All righty then, and welcome back. I have an opportunity, as I do whenever I need the expertise of a man who knows everything there is to know about elections. I tap into Hans von Spakovsky, of course, with the Heritage Foundation. He's an expert in, you know, not just elections, but in civil justice and civil rights and the First Amendment. Hey, Hans, we still have a First Amendment, don't we?
Yeah, we do. George, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I can't complain. And, you know, I had the opportunity last week to go out to Mar-a-Lago for the premiere of 2000 Mules. And it was nice to see your face in the movie. you can't do a movie about election integrity without asking you some questions. And all I'm going to say is, why is this film being panned at just about every turn on the internet in terms of coverage on the news stations, even the so-called conservative news stations? Is it just too true?
Yeah, most of the mainstream media is that way because they don't want to actually investigate the very serious things that Dinesh D'Souza has found, which could potentially, you know, call into question the results of the 2020 election if law enforcement actually got the data from Dinesh D'Souza and started investigating. If they actually, for example, picked up the mules, the people who were dumping huge numbers of absentee ballots in Dropbox after Dropbox after Dropbox to say, what were you doing? Where did you get these ballots? You know, were they taken from voters without their permission? Were these fraudulent ballots? I mean, that's the kind of thing that ought to happen. They don't want that to happen. And unfortunately, I think too many other folks who might normally cover this are afraid to cover it because they get so much criticism when they do.
Oh, and that's so frustrating to someone like me who gets on the air every single day and says, we have a right to ask questions about everything, but in particular,
that's right.
Yeah, but in particular about something so vitally important to this republic as our elections. Are they safe? Are we guaranteeing that only the people who have a right to vote are voting? And why have we allowed these changes in election laws, which I think are just crazy? All this absentee balloting, all this ballot harvesting, all this nonsense is really making the American people very distrustful.
Right. Well, look, I'll give a typical example of this, Joyce, if I may. Look, I got a call a week or and a half ago from a reporter for the New York Times, who had also seen the movie, right?
Okay.
And what were his questions to me? Well, he clearly was just trying to point out flaws in the movie, because one of the question he wanted me to answer was, well, is it really illegal to pay someone to pick up and deliver absentee ballots? He had no interest whatsoever. Look, that's a minor, unimportant issue. He had no interest whatsoever in doing what an investigative reporter ought to be doing, which is, again, trying to find out the identity of those vote traffickers who were shown in the movie showing up at polling places and dumping ballots in to, again, do what law enforcement ought to be doing, questioning them and saying, where'd you get these ballots? Mm-hmm. What were you doing? Who were you working for? To find out whether these were legitimate ballots or whether they were illegal, fraudulently produced ballots. He had no interest in that whatsoever, even though that is the issue that needs to be answered.
Right. And because the results, if it were to be proven that those were left-wing organizations that were collecting ballots in whatever manner they were able to, some of which were obviously fraudulent, and then distributing it through paid mules, that's not of any interest to him. What's interest to him is, are you allowed to give water to people standing online in Georgia? Because that right. fits his narrative, you know?
Yeah, no, it just shows again how really one-sided the mainstream media is in not actually doing its job mm-hmm. of covering the news, doing investigations, but basically supporting one political party and its candidates. I mean, that's clearly what they want to do.
Yeah. You know, I'm looking at this this primary that was held in Pennsylvania yesterday. And now you have these three candidates running in a Republican primary for a Senate seat that was held by Pat Toomey. And you're looking last night. I stayed up because I'm interested in these things. And I'm watching 31.2% of the vote goes to David McCormick. 31.3% goes to Mehmet Oz. And then, of course, the spoiler, Kathy Barnett got something like 24%. Am I supposed to believe that there'll be a legitimate counting in an election this close, or will I always be left with the doubt that something was monkeyed around with in this election?
Well, it's hard to get over that kind of skepticism in a race that close. But right. you know, that kind of skepticism would be greatly reduced if Pennsylvania passed many of the reforms to clean up their system that have been proposed by Republicans in the state legislature. But, you know, every time they do that, the Democratic governor vetoes the bill. You know, the best example of this is it wasn't too long ago that they passed a good bill that would have put in a voter ID requirement in Pennsylvania. And what did the Democratic governor do? He rejected it. Right. And you're not going to increase competence in elections in Pennsylvania and get rid of that skepticism until that happens. The legislature passes good reforms and the governor, instead of vetoing, says, yeah, I support that. We're going to clean up the system.
Yeah. Well, thank God I live in the state of Florida, where my governor has done the antithesis of that.
That's right. And listen, you all won a very significant victory recently because, you know, the big Florida Texas reform bill that got passed, the one that made really good changes in the law. You know, as soon as it was passed, what happened? You know, twice the usual suspects on the left sued, and they got a really stupid, bad decision from a very biased Obama-appointed federal judge in Florida saying, oh, yeah, all of these changes are discriminatory, which was just ridiculous. And he basically said, Florida couldn't put any of these changes in, and the state of Florida appealed it to the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, and the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals stayed. That judge's opinion said, no, this law will remain in force while it's on appeal, so the reforms are going to go forward, which is good because you've got elections coming up.
We do, and I can assure you that the forces on the left have mobilized, the Democrat Party has mobilized against this governor because he's a get-it-done kind of guy, and they cannot stand the fact that he has literally taken charge of the way our schools are run, the way our elections are run, the way our courts are run. Does anybody think for a moment that he would tolerate in this state people showing up in front of a Supreme Court justice's vacation home? I mean, he's already put a law in place that says you can't protest any judge in front of their home. And that's the kind of stuff that infuriates the left and why he is definitely a target for them.
Yeah, and you just contrast that with the fact that Merrick Garland, the U.S. Attorney General, refuses to do anything about the protests at justices' homes that's been occurring, despite the fact that there is a federal law that says you can't do that because it's clearly an attempt to influence the decision of the judge. And think about it this way. That statute says you can't do it at the homes of judges, witnesses, and others, jury members in a trial. And anybody who looks at that is going to say, well, of course, you don't want protests at the home of a juror, at the home of a witness, because what's the clear intent? It's to intimidate them in whatever case they're in. And yet Garland is just letting it happen at the homes of these justices.
Yeah, I understand that the new lieutenant governor, Winsome Sears, Spears or whatever, she has posted guards at the Virginia Supreme Court justices' homes because she believes in election integrity, you know, and it doesn't take that much. I just don't see that there are enough Republicans who are willing to go out on the limb and say we're going to stand for what's right. We don't care what the political fallout might be. I'm thankful for Governor DeSantis every day, I tell you that.
I believe it. You know, I used to wish I was not living in Virginia under the prior administration, but now that we actually have a good attorney general, a good governor, and a good lieutenant governor in Virginia, I'm happy to still be there.
That's it. But you'll end up down here. Everybody with a conscience ends up down here.
That is true.
And anybody who cares about how much tax dollars they end up paying for these ridiculous programs that allow, you know, unlimited border crossers. You know, we're coming up against yet another example of how they are so lost in terms of future elections that they think that they're actually bringing in future voters for the Republican Party. And what we're finding out here in Florida is don't count on the Hispanics that are settling in the state of Florida. They're much closer in philosophy and ideology because of what they've endured to the Republican Party. You know, can't wait to see this backfire on them.
Yeah, that'll make for very interesting elections.
Absolutely. And I thank you once again for coming on whenever I need you. And I'm trying to coerce you to leave Virginia and come down here because it's just so much. It's paradise down here. It really is. It'd be harder for you to get to work, though, although everything's done online. Thanks so much, Hans von Spakovsky. You can read all of his articles in numerous places, but head over to the Heritage Foundation, heritage.org. Thanks so much. Talk to you soon.
Sure thing, George. Bye-bye.
All right. And, you know, he is the expert, and he talks about these razor-thin election margins that we're seeing right now in Pennsylvania. And to all of my friends who told me that Kathy Barnett is the real deal, guess not, huh? Sometimes you just gotta listen to my thinking, because I used to think like Democrats. I really did. When I was young, I had this, you know, this attitude that as long as I could, you know, get away with it, it was a good practice. You know, as long as I got what I wanted in the end, I could rationalize the things that I did. And so when I saw this candidate arise from nowhere and start showing all this traction and come across, look, I'm sure she has some very compelling story, the story about her her mother deciding to not have an abortion, or she survived an abortion, whatever the story was, that's very touching. And she's probably got a future as a speaker or something, I don't know. But all of a sudden, she was emerging as the chosen one for the job, even though she had no track record whatsoever. And, and then people said to me, well, but what was the track record of Mehmet Oz? Well, I looked it up. He had a track record. He may not have been a declared political type, but he prescribes traditional and definitely conservative values in every story that he presents and in every bit of research that he does in the medical field or in the psychological field. And so he did have a track record I could look at. The other one, Kathy Barnett, did not. And that's always a sign to me. It really is, because, you know, Democrats will vote for anybody because they have a D after their name. We independents and you Republicans, you're not supposed to do that, okay? You're supposed to actually vet the candidates and make sure you understand who they are, where they came from, and what they believe in before you cast your vote. Anyway, let me take a quick break. Don't forget, coming up after me, Dan Bongino, and then at 4 o'clock, Ben Shapiro. And then tomorrow morning at 5:30, we begin the madness all over again with Jen and Bill. Stay right where you are. So People Magazine is over. They're not going to have a print magazine anymore. And talk about an end of an era, right? Netflix just laid off another 150 people. That's a third major layoff. And, you know, Chris Wallace is going to be doing a Sunday political show. You can't make this stuff up. You don't have to, right? And the Ringling Circus is coming back. Now, that may not sound like a news story to you, but I have to tell you that the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus has always been a part of not just my childhood, but a part of my children's childhood. And it could never have been a part of my grandchildren's childhood because it was just shut down. And it was shut down because there were plenty of, actual proofs that the animals were being treated badly. And, you know, there was no reason to see elephants parading around and all the rest of it, you know. But guess what? They're having a comeback tour, just no elephants. No animals. From what I can see, it's an animal-free circus show. So I was thinking about that. The greatest show on earth will be coming back without the animals. And I was trying to decide whether or not I would even go. You know, for me as a child, especially as a child growing up in New York City, now we had the Bronx Zoo where I could, if someone took me, go see animals. You know, but they were in cages and they didn't do tricks, you know. They were just, like, looked lethargic lying in these, you know, pens. And it just didn't feel like, I never was a big zoo person. It just seemed to me like, you know, I was visiting a jail for various species, you know. It didn't turn me on. But the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus was a chance for me to actually, like, smell animals and see animals and watch animals do these like cool tricks. And I realize now it was probably kind of cruel how they were trained to do those tricks, but boy did I love it, and boy did my children love it. And you know, now we find out that they're coming back. First of all, I didn't realize that there was anything still intact, really, you know, but there is. And so I did some homework, did some research, because somebody had mentioned to me that it was coming back. How did I feel about it? And I thought, well, I don't believe it's coming back. But I checked it out. I went to ringling.com. And, you know, the cover page was there, counting down the days and the minutes and even the seconds until we see you and your family again. We've been searching near and far and over and under for the world's best performances, acts, and superstars with one humongous goal in mind, to make the greatest show on earth even greater. So they're going to reopen next year. As far as I know, I think it's fall of 2023. And I tried to, you know, see, for me, one of the best parts about going to the circus was watching the trapeze artists and all of these, you know, incredible, double-jointed people and, you know, just interesting human beings who could do amazing things, right? I loved the idea that there were clowns. I know people are terrified of clowns, and that there's been movies that have made people even more terrified about clowns, like It or The or whatever that movie is called. But to me, it was unbelievable to watch like 25 fully normal looking clowns climb into a Volkswagen. I remember that. You know, I remember being a kid and seeing the guys on stilts walking around. And I remember watching, I know we're not going to see a lion jumping through a ring of fire anymore, but are we still going to see human beings shot out of cannons? Because I remember that. I definitely remember the trapeze artists, particularly the ladies that were just so, in my opinion, as a small child, they were the ultimate in flying femininity. And it was just a fabulous experience for me. And I know I'm supposed to feel guilty about the lions and the tigers and the bears, oh my, and the elephants and all the rest of it. But without a circus, then that would have been the movie Dumbo. Now, I understand that Disney's probably trying to, you know, make you forget about the movie Dumbo. But You know, those are my childhood memories, and I'm so tired of the woke culture just eliminating all of them. You know, we can't have animals because it's cruel and PETA will come after us, and we can't, you know, make fun of short people, so there'll be no more little tiny clowns and all of this, you know, give me a break. I wanted to talk about this this one story, and I probably don't have time today, so I'll leave it for tomorrow. But Princeton is about to do what Princeton and other Ivy League institutions seem compelled to do these days. They're going to fire a professor who just had who told the truth and said that all this woke stuff is bad for us, and it's definitely bad for our college age students. So Princeton's going to fire Joshua Katz, who, by the way, I don't personally know, but I know other people who are in the department that he's in. So before I, finalized how I felt about this story, I asked someone who had worked with him, and they said he was one of the most brilliant professors that they had ever worked alongside of, and they worked alongside of some pretty incredible, staff. And he had gone through some crazy stuff years ago with, he had a consensual relationship with a student, you're not allowed to do that, but he was, he paid the piper or whatever he did. But now, because he took a position that you should be allowed to say anything that you want to, particularly in an environment like a college campus. And for that, he is literally about to be fired. You know how hard it is to fire a tenured professor from a university like Princeton? One of the most distinguished classics professors in the entire country? But because he criticized the school's racial politics, he's history. They said he didn't exercise his free speech responsibly. So now they get to determine what the responsible kind of free speech is that we're allowed to use. Oh, Lord, have mercy on us, please, God. Anyway, I thank you for your time this time. Until next time, my plan is to be back here tomorrow at noon, if it be his will and he delays his coming. And Lori Cardoza Moore, Lori Moore Cardoza, whichever, I forgot which order her name is said in, but she'll be my guest tomorrow. We'll be talking about all this woke nonsense. May God bless you, and may God bless the United States of America. We could use a blessing.